Welcome to the Positive Energy Podcast, the official podcast of the University of Ottawa's Positive Energy Initiative. We seek to strengthen public confidence in Canadian energy policy, regulation, and decision-making through evidence-based research and analysis, engagement, and recommendations for action. I'm your host, Brendan Frank. Canada's energy regulatory authorities are operating in highly dynamic contexts. There are forces at play that don't naturally lend themselves to a stable or predictable regulatory environment. To catch up and keep up with the pace of change and multiple competing imperatives, institutional and regulatory innovation will be vital. So where have we seen successful innovations in Canada's energy regulatory system, and how can we scale them up across Canada? Our guest today is Dr. Patricia Larkin, a senior research associate with Positive Energy. Her latest study is out today, and it tackles these exact questions. Welcome, Patricia.
Thanks very much, Brendan, for arranging this discussion today. I'm excited that the report is publicly available.
Yes, I think we all are. It's been a long time in the making. So maybe we could start by talking about why there is such a need for energy regulatory innovation right now. What's really driving that?
As listeners to this series have heard, strengthening confidence in the roles and responsibilities of public authorities is one of the most pivotal factors shaping Canada's energy future in an age of climate change. And it is one of the most understudied factors Positive Energy has found. So whether focused on resource development, economics, such as rate setting, system infrastructure and operations, or health and environmental protection, quasi-judicial regulators operate within well-established principles of independence from their policy-making authority. However, roles and responsibilities in energy decision-making are changing, and regulators are playing an increasingly important role in delivering economic and societal objectives, as well as being tasked with regulating more complex situations. We found common issue areas include the evolving social, environmental, and values context, the growing variety of stakeholders in decision-making, rapid technological change in upstream production, delivery, and end-use systems, and an operational emphasis on risk-based regulatory delivery. And as we would have it, there is policy uncertainty affecting each of these.
And we'll dive into the details of that momentarily, but maybe we could zoom out for a moment. This is an incredibly dense study, and it unfolded in multiple phases over the past year and a half. And I was hoping you could walk us through the arc of the project, its beginnings, and the collaborations that you undertook along the way.
Well, we'll hear the term Canadian energy regulatory decision making quite often today. This is where the project set out to learn about what is working in this sphere and where there is potential to scale up successful innovations. So Positive Energy partnered with CANPUT, the Nonprofit Association of Canada's Provincial, Territorial, and Federal Energy and Utility Regulators, and we undertook this collaborative research project. It was guided by a 7-member advisory group, and this was composed of senior representatives of both organizations, and we met about 6 times over the first year. And the Positive Energy research team took the lead on developing the research objectives and methodology, and did so in close collaboration with this advisory group. This helped to ensure the research was both relevant and feasible, and it fostered relations of trust and shared purpose. For example, the advisory group feedback significantly strengthened the survey instrument. That was our first step. And CANPUT drew on its vast networks to ensure the survey sample included a large number of regulators and stakeholders, including representatives of utilities, large and small customers, indigenous organizations, and other non-government organizations. Then further input from the CANPUT members likewise affirmed the selected case studies such that they reflected member interests, and they also fostered regulator participation in the case study interviews that were completed.
So going back to the survey for a moment, I was wondering if you could hand us a few key takeaways and discuss how they informed the rest of your study and the way the advisory group guided the project after that point.
to the results from the online survey really pointed out the range of drivers for energy regulatory innovation. Approximately 50 respondents completed the survey. They were asked to rate the relative importance of broad drivers of innovation, as well as drivers for policymaker-regulator interactions and regulator public engagement. They were also asked to suggest innovative practices. The key broad drivers, just to name the top three, were the evolving social environmental goals and values, the need for operational and decision-making efficiency, and rapid technological change. And I also want to point out that non-regulators thought that economic and market interests were the most important drivers, while regulators focused actually on the demands for enhanced communication and stakeholder engagement. So there was a little bit of variation there with respect to who we asked. In terms of the drivers for policymaker-regulator interactions, and the respondents actually had 11 choices here, I'll just give a flavor that the most important driver is the clear articulation of policy goals that affect regulation, and this was followed by regulatory independence. And third, in terms of the regulator public engagement, the most important driver there was public trust in energy decision making. And then three drivers essentially tied in importance after this: the need for interaction and transparent decision making, operational and decision making efficiency again, and displaying neutrality while providing opportunities for public outreach.
Interesting. So some really divergent answers among different groups who took the survey.
We did cut some of those responses depending on who was answering, and it's interesting to see that difference of opinion in the Canadian landscape.
So the second phase of the project involved two very detailed case studies, and I was hoping you could talk about each of them in turn and what the key takeaways are.
Well, then based on the survey, like I said, it helped to choose the case studies. And so the first one I'll talk about is the formal policymaker-regulator interactions. Here we studied five agreements within Canada, and the interview participants represented both the policymaker and regulator for each agreement. And I want to emphasize that all the participants in the interviews underscored the solid relationship that pre-existed the development and implementation of these agreements. So they also noted benefits, and these are categorized as the demonstrated commitment between the two organizations, the areas they could assist each other, improve communication on a daily basis as well as through regular meetings. And there were also a benefit related to their stakeholder interests. There were barriers too in the agreements, but only in two areas. They identified the leadership, a barrier that could come from leadership, and another through the priorities, capacity, and resources between the organizations. On the success factors, these were categorized in the report in two areas, considerations for each party individually, as well as the organizations working together. Then in the second case, this did focus on public engagement. And again, the interviewees considered and told me about their noted benefits, barriers, and success factors. But this time we focused on two regulator processes about distributed energy resources. One was completed last winter, the Alberta Utilities Commission's Distributed System Inquiry. And there was also the Ontario Energy Board's consultation called Responding to Distributed Energy Resources. And I was thinking that some listeners will know that this process has since been refocused and is now called the Framework for Energy Innovation, Distributed Resources and Utility Incentives. It's still a consultation, but the title has changed. So my remarks really concern the initial consultation process. Here, the participants again identified benefits and barriers, but this in the report is written up more like trade-offs. And that's because the interviewees identified the benefit of the open process in both Alberta and Ontario, but this raised concern about uncertainty and longer timelines. They noted the benefit of taking a systems-based perspective in these processes, but this raised concern about reduced clarity for their purpose. And then thirdly, there's the benefit of having diverse participants in the consultations, but this raised concern about their capacity and resources. So while this may seem more daunting than the clear support for formal agreements in the first case, participants also identified how success could be achieved in addressing these trade-offs. And here they broke it down with respect to the engagement process components, the engagement content, the stakeholder representation, and in reporting. And I just finish on this question with the key final aspect to both case studies. And that is that our report offers a tool, and this is proposed as a series of questions regulators could use to inform discussions and decision-making for planned or existing innovations in these two case study areas. And in fact, we also wonder if the questions are broad enough that they could apply to other innovative areas, but because of the study, we'll focus on the two cases. These questions could be posed and answers considered when regulators begin to think about initiating a formal agreement or public engagement process, or during an evaluation of an existing arrangement. The questions are based on the factors of success participants identified, and with the research team's interest to ensure an applied component to this project, we hope the tool is used as regulators in all domains further implement innovative practices.
Yes, like I said, it is a very dense report, very, very data rich. So say I'm an executive in a provincial regulatory authority and you have a few minutes to tell me what I need to know based on your findings. What would you tell me?
I'd focus on several clear roles for the executive leadership in the formal agreement. We'll start there again. Whether within their control at their own organization or in working together with their policymaking authority, there is a need to signal that commitment to the formal agreement by being active in its development and implementation, as well as to relay this attitude throughout the organization. For instance, leadership can work to agree on intentions and goal setting. They could be clear on priorities and roles and responsibilities. And there's even an opportunity here to recognize the potential during the discussions under the agreement to move along that interaction continuum from day-to-day communications that avoid surprises between the organizations through to early policy discussions and how regulators might be asked to respond. That's one area our report looks into. And for the executive leadership working in public engagement, I'll focus on the regulator for a moment, that they could consider how to begin to coordinate with other public authorities engaged in the same issue. And in starting off with an engagement process, for instance, to feel comfortable having a third party manage the kickoff, the open session that the participants really appreciated. And in using a consultant with expertise in process more so than content. At this point, regulators may need to be humble because some stakeholders are actually more knowledgeable in certain areas of the energy regulatory framework and how innovation could further be developed. Another point is to provide opportunities for stakeholders to talk about benefits of doing things differently and not just the risks and costs.
And say I'm a more junior staffer at a regulatory agency, or I interact with regulators often in my job, but I'm not actually working for a regulator. And I want to see those organizations become more flexible, more innovative. What concrete steps could I think about taking?
Well, we could go back and take another few examples from the case studies. And I want to reiterate here that there are questions in the tool I mentioned regarding all of these topics we've been talking about the last few minutes. There's a role for all staff members at the regulatory or policymaking organization. Within each organization, employees in all departments can participate and demonstrate buy-in, for instance, under a formal agreement. Responsibilities to the schedule and commitment to the regular meetings is important, as well as to share their prior experiences, both good and bad, such that issues can be addressed. For the regulator and public engagement, one key activity on the regulator's side is to work hard to identify stakeholders beyond the usual suspects. And for the stakeholder organizations here as a staffer, I suggest trying to keep up with the range of opportunities there are for the organization and continue to identify and alert the regulator for how it could leverage your expertise. However, both these issues may be challenging right now for some organizations, again, because of that trade-off I mentioned regarding capacity and resources. And I just had one other idea that transcends both our cases and all individuals, and that would be the key goal for those for everybody to encourage openness and transparency.
Yeah, that is a real cultural shift in some cases that may not happen overnight, but is incredibly important work. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to this conversation before we finish off?
Well, I thought, sure, I would actually. And I'd just like to finish with the thought that this collaborative research process between Positive Energy and CAMPIT both fostered and reflected regulatory excellence and could serve as a model for future endeavors. This is because not only will CAMPIT members benefit from the research findings, but the research process itself demonstrated their willingness to be open and transparent with us, the academic community. And this is a less common example of stakeholder engagement, I thought, but one that helped to identify successful institutional innovations. And senior regulatory executives engaged in detailed and frank examination of their experiences, and they knew that the findings could be good or bad, but were willing to do so and being made publicly available to the benefit of the regulatory community writ large. So in sum, I guess I would like to end with the idea that the project has improved understanding of shared challenges and opportunities, as well as suggested actions that could enhance those two cases of policymaker-regulator relationships and public engagement approaches. So thank you very much, Brendan, for giving me the opportunity to talk about the report today.
Dr. Patricia Larkin, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. You've been listening to the Positive Energy Podcast. To see more of our research and to find out about upcoming events, check out our website. Today's episode was produced by Alicia Aziz, Raphael Desordi, and myself, Brendan Frank. We'll be back next month. See you soon.